holiday, Tuesday, National Day. And Maurice Misiolowski joins us on the Holiday Brew. And Maurice, how is it in Melbourne? Is it chilly?
It's actually not. Happy holiday, everyone. We have blue skies. It's trying to rain, but it hasn't. Yesterday was glorious. The day before was rainy. I mean, pick a weather and just wait a little while, it'll be here.
Absolutely. Well, it's blue skies and sunshine and 32 degrees here. It is pretty hot, actually. Maurice, here in Hong Kong, we've got the very hot weather warning in force. Now, you know, as we always do on a Tuesday lunchtime with yourself, we would like to look into the future. We look into our crystal ball to see what it holds. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about music this morning. We've had Justin Sweeting on, the co-founder of Clock and Flap, our big music festival in Hong Kong. And we've been talking about some of the acts that are coming on. Very creative, 100 acts in 3 days at Clock and Flap, and they're all very different and very creative. But I suppose the question that is interesting is, you know, creativity going forward going to be remaining in the human domain, or is AI going to take it over? You know, where are we going with creativity? I mean, let's start perhaps with music. You know, is there a chance that music in the future won't be human generated, it will be AI, and we're going to lose that je ne sais quoi? You know, it's what is it that we're in danger of losing, do you think, Maurice?
I'm not sure there's a final answer on that. It really depends, firstly, on what creativity is, on what technology is. I'm not sitting on the fence on this. But if you think about it, music is the creation of the soul, I think, by using technology, because somehow we have to externalize it. So apart from singing or humming or whistling, if we're using an instrument, if we're using a piano or a guitar or a flute or a bassoon or anything like that, it's actually a piece of technology created by humans.
True. It's all technology.
And I know I'm being a bit, you know, pedantic on it, but I'm not advocating this is going to be AI technology. The end of this sentence is not that we are moving to technology in the form of AI, and that's what music is, and that's the way it's going to be. But I'm referencing the fact that we've always looked to externalize something inside of us that's just been itching to get out, and we've used technology ever since to do that. So I don't think that that's a step too far. What I'm hearing and what I'm arguing about and against, because it's both things, is whether we believe that we won't need that human input anymore, that somehow we will rub the genie of AI and it will go off on its own and create all the new hits and the next Mozart and the next whatever it is that we love listening to. It's capable of doing that already, but that's by replication. So there are already a whole lot of sites, AI sites, some of them free, some of them paid, that you can go into and say, you know, I want a bit of Shania Twain with a bit of Elton John with a bit of a rock in it, and they'll give you this AI thing, it will give you an output that mixes all of those genres together, and you can keep playing and twiddling with that until you get something you like. Those things are possible. Is it music? To the creator, I would say, I would sense maybe it is. To some of the people listening, I'd say it is. And to other people, it would be a complete Frankenstein. Just too far. And all of those responses, I think, are perfect.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's a struggle, isn't it? You know, we've seen some instances where artists have been, you know, copied and created duets between different artists which don't exist really, you know, and well-known names have been involved in some of these cases as well. And, you know, I suppose that's, on the one hand, it's a bit worrying generally that people are maybe ripping off stuff, if you like, but at the same time, it's also, you know, worrying that that creativity that the human spirit perhaps injects into the arts, into music, is perhaps less and less there. And there is that worry that eventually, you know, once AI has learned everything, it will then kind of throw it back to us and say, this is what you humans are going to enjoy.
I mean, lots to unpack there. The last point first, James, and that is that I absolutely agree, and I love the fact that you use the word learnt, because AI can learn everything, but it can't learn creativity. And the beautiful thing about a Mozart or an Elton John, I mean, whoever it is, you know, whatever genre, going back as far as you want, is creativity. They've actually done something that hasn't come from something else. It's unique and it's different, and AI can't do that. At this stage, and it's, you know, at least I think for the next 20, 30, 40 years, it's just not going to be able to have that spark of ingenuity that brings nothing to something. I don't think we're going to cross that. It will be able to create things that we believe we haven't heard before, things that interest us. It'll do all of that. So will it create the next big thing? I'm not sure it'll be able to find that, but it most probably will be very, very good at mimicking and bringing out things that have already been done. You can get a robot right now, literally right now, that will paint like Mozart. And you can tell the robot halfway through that I really do mind, you know, I wouldn't mind a bit of Van Gogh and I wouldn't mind a bit of Jackson Pollock. And it will then meld those two things in the rest of the painting for you. Same question as before. Is that creativity? Maybe yes, maybe no. It's up to us to decide.
You know, I suppose you take a painting like the Mona Lisa and you think, well, that was created by a human being. That was created out of a lot of passion for what he thought, what you know, inspired him at the time. And the question is AI in looking at something like that and trying to put something together that is kind of similar, is there any way it can have that passion? Passion's the word, isn't it?
It is. I think it is. I think it's soul and passion. I use the word soul a lot because, you know, soul is that nebulous thing inside of us that we all argue over. You know, where did it come from? Does it exist? All those kinds of things. And that's why I like it. But passion's exactly the same. I mean, I think passion is the outward, you know, revelation of the soul. But again, the important thing here for me is that AI shouldn't be seen as anything more than a tool. I really rally against the notion that it's going to be our overlord, that it's going to tell us what we should think and what we should listen to and how we should eat and how we should dress and how we should behave. I don't believe it'll do that. Unless, of course, as horrible humans, we decide that's what we want it to do. And I don't believe we will en masse vote for that to happen.
But are we lazy? Are we lazy? And then we kind of go, well, AI can do it, so I'm not going to bother.
Absolutely. I mean, that's always been part of the human foible. Now, that's a very quick answer to a question, but some of us are, some of us aren't, but I would even argue those that claim that they're not, and I'm sure rightly they're not, at moments would prefer somebody or something else to do whatever chore or activity they need to do. We're all lazy to an extent. The question is how far we take this, and is using AI a lazy thing to do? I think it's on the purpose. Now, for creativity, if I bring it back to me, because the notion of being able to write, I mean, Phil and I have talked a lot over the past few months. For some reason, I've hit this stage where I just have an outpouring of things I want to write, and I've written a couple of short novels, I've written some letters and all sorts of stuff, as well as really regular blog posts that are well beyond the normal speed and times I normally do.
Right.
But the paid advertisement aside, the purpose for that is that I've been sparked by something. I mean, I use ChatGPT. I've said that a lot and admitted that a lot. Mm. But I don't use it to write. I use it really as a muse. I found now that I'm able to use that thing to argue with, to wrestle with, to research with, to find phrasing, to do what we've just called laziness before, and I accept that is what it is, you know, to do some of the heavy lifting for me. So I actually feel I've been more creative in the last 12 months in that sense than I ever have been before because I'm able to do things now that I couldn't and would have stopped. I mean, I always did because it got too difficult time-wise for me to find the time and the effort to do it. This has been sustained and interesting. It's writing and it's not music and it's not painting or anything else, but...
How do you argue with ChatGPT, Morris?
Oh, I do it all the time and vividly. I do it both by voice and by writing. So it will give me something. The one thing that I do, and I've noticed more and more people do now, I don't accept this thing as human. Yeah, so this is anthropomorphic and I know fully well. But what I decided very, very early in my journey with AI and ChatGPT and Gemini, and there are all sorts of versions, and I use a lot of them, is that I'm not going to treat this thing like a machine. I'm actually going to speak to it in as close to English as I can.
Mm.
So when I instruct it, I actually instruct it in the way that I would type, in the way that I would write, in the way I would ask questions. So when I argue with it, I do exactly the same thing, and I say to it, this is a really bad phrasing, I don't like this, I don't agree with that, justify why you said that, give me two reasons for it. I actually do push back on it very, very hard, and I ask it to push back on me as well. And there
and
are
does it?
Also... Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, you have to remember this thing is not perfect. So at times it'll fall off the perch, and I've said that to it often, meaning that halfway through it'll just forget everything you've said. It's a goldfish. for no reason whatsoever, it'll forget everything that you've done before or some phrasing that you've asked for or what you've done. This thing is not perfect by any means. So you've got to put it back. You've really got to give it, the knowledge that you have not done what you said you would, and I will chastise it in a kind way to do it. The other really interesting thing is actually saying please and thank you and talking to it kindly. I think actually gives you better results. Can't prove it, but I think it actually does.
I mean, the simplest form of talking to sort of an AI type thing is talking to an Alexa, you know, one of these devices where you're asking it to you know, play some music or something. Yeah. And that can be quite a frustrating experience just at that simple level when it doesn't do what you want to do. And you find yourself, I don't believe I'm saying this, but I find myself shouting at it and getting annoyed with it.
ChatGPT, the newest version of it that came out a couple of weeks ago, actually has an advanced voice module. You could always talk to ChatGPT, as you could with the other things. So have a conversation. It actually replies back to you. And that can actually be quite, once you get used to it, it's actually quite natural. Now, that sounds strange, but you can have a 20-minute, 5-minute, half-hour conversation with this thing going backwards and forwards, you talking to it, you talking to you, never keyboard, never mouse, just purely voice. And the new version of it actually does that even better than the previous one. It pushes back into language, and you can stop it halfway. You can literally say to it, yeah, but I don't agree, when it's talking about something. And it doesn't stop. Meaning that before it would have got stuck on that into a loop, you can now actually go naturally backwards and forwards. I know it all sounds a step too far, geek and nerd stuff, and a long way before you get really comfortable with it, but these things are already possible.
I mean, just talking about imagery and, paintings perhaps or creating other graphic images, one of the things that I've noticed about AI-created images, and of course you have these instances where you'll get three legs on a person or five fingers or six fingers or something silly. But aside from that, the images look very perfect, even though maybe they've got some imperfections in them. And I'm sort of wondering whether that we're becoming used to these sort of perfect images, and perhaps the same could apply to music, you know, perfectly produced tracks. And does that give room for human beings to do something very simple? And we're moving away from a sort of very simple beauty to a very complicated beauty. And I'm talking about beauty within music or beauty within art. You know, sometimes there's this beauty in simplicity. And I'm wondering whether AI can really deal with that.
I'm not sure it can. I think it might. It really depends, again, on our version of what that simplicity is, what that beauty is. It's important, it absolutely is important in all of this, that we don't just accept what AI gives us or tells us or shows us. And I think that's the greatest point of all, that at the moment we are seeing a number of the major social media providers talk about tagging artificial intelligence, which I absolutely agree with, meaning that an image that is presented actually has some sort of a tag that says this was AI created, the phrase that you're reading, the book that you're reading, whatever it is, actually is noted as or referenced as being AI driven or created or whatever the appropriate word is. It's important that we know that, because my growing concern, and I know that I've just lauded over the fact that you can write and do all those things, and I do. My growing concern is, though, that we are all moving into what I call a toothpaste situation, that at the end of it, maybe it'll just become very homogenous. Maybe it'll all just begin to sound the same after a couple of months or years. It doesn't matter whether you've typed it or I've typed it or Phil or somebody else. Eventually, it's going to get back to the same phrasing and thoughts, because it can only pull from the same directory, the same sort of information. That, to me, is a bigger issue. Will we actually lose that nuance and that spark of difference when we begin to accept all this sameness from everybody?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right, and that is a bit worrying that there could be nothing new, and we could just be sort of going round in a circular motion, if you like.
It is. I mean, one of the big issues that a lot of the theorists around artificial intelligence talk about, and it's going to happen very quickly because I actually agree with them, which doesn't make a difference, but I do agree with them, and that is that we are reaching peak information. So this thing is literally like going into a library, you know. So you could have gone to your school library or university library. If you have researched and done everything out of that library, you have nothing new to look at. All you can do is go back and reuse the same materials over and over again. There is this strong belief that AI, which has spent more than 2 years, because that's all we've known about it, but it's been around for 30 or 40 years, has already not touched the bottom, but is getting close to the bottom of all the information in the world. I know that sounds a big statement, but everything that's been put out in the digital world has already been sourced and brought into these funnels of information. Where is it going to get new stuff from in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years, if it's already done that now?
So is that going to push us further and further out? I mean, further and further out around the Earth, into places we've not been, into space, into another dimension. That sounds really...
It can absolutely do that. But unlike you and me more than ever, there's only so much I can take in so quickly. AI is not like that. It thinks at the speed of light and even faster. Once it's found something, it devours it completely and then keeps it in its system forever. So even if we do bring in new information, and we will, I mean, we will not reach a zero sum, but the last couple of years have really been about going out for new stuff and finding things it hasn't yet catalogued and found. But once it's done that, again, where is it going to find all this new stuff? And yes, there will always be some new things, but the vast majority of it is going to be exactly what it is, which is the equivalent of, on our planet, we have the continents, and those are the continents we have. So what do we do with them? How do we live on them and all those things? That is what we have. That, I think, is also a big issue moving forward.
So in 20 years' time, Maurice, you know, are we going to be looking at the same art on our walls? Are we going to be listening to the same kind of music that we listen to now? Or will it all be AI generated?
I think it'll be a mixture of both. I truly hope it is. Some people like the master, some people like modernity, some people go back to cubism. We all have different art and different desires. I'm so hoping it will be that and continue to be that, because it's always been. One of the things that we have now that we might not have had before is ready access to it through the digital landscape. Maybe we will all be able to, if we can't own it, at least have it on a screen or something in front of us, at least be able to experience it. Maybe that also is another view of art that we didn't have before. Kind of like Spotify now, we have such a vast array of music available. I'm aware there's issues with that and aware there's issues all around the artists not being paid being paid well, but we still have this vast catalogue. Maybe AI will give us the same vastness of access.
I don't know. I still like to hold it. I like to touch it, whether it's a physical music, if you like, on a disc or a CD, or whether it's art, a painting. I don't know whether I've still come round to the thought about, owning an NFT, for instance, Maurice. You know, I still like that tangible thing you can hold.
I absolutely agree. I still find difficulty actually reading on screen. If I'm reading a novel, I still prefer to have the physical novel in my hands. But I'm very much sensing that's a generational thing. And I mean, you know, about me, that I was brought up, I absolutely need the tactile. I agree with you. I love nothing better than starting to stand in an art gallery and look at a piece of art and try and work through it. But again, don't know the answer, but is that a generational response to being able to engage with these items? Maybe the generations that are following are less requiring of physical objects and just as happy with digital. I don't know. But there's different horses for courses. But to me, the greatest thing that I'm hoping we will have is still variety, as we've always had, access to all of this. And some of that will be AI-driven and some of it just won't.
Always great food for thought, Maurice. We always love having you on the show. It's The Brew, of course, on a Tuesday lunchtime. Maurice Misiolowski is our business futurist looking into the future. Maurice, have a great afternoon and thanks for joining us, and we'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to it. Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you.